You're listening to Gone Mobile, your input and output for all things .NET Maui and mobile.
Welcome back to another Gone Mobile. Alan, are you out of the winter yet up there?
Nope, but it looks nice outside, but it's still cold.
So no snow though?
No,
just the cold.
It's almost shorts weather for Canadians, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's creeping up warmer and warmer here. Today is kind of the sunny, warm, but wind, and then blah. So still not quite, great weather to be wanting to be outside like crazy, which is good if you want to learn more about, things that you would otherwise not want to do if it was nice weather outside, like MS Build.
I don't know. I like working with, when you said MS Build, but I generally like coding even when it's sunny outside.
Yeah, I like coding too. But MS Build, I think I've internally thought, and we've talked about it with a few people, that it's almost, you kind of love it or you hate it. Do you find that about it?
Yeah, I'm somewhere in between.
Yeah, it's something that I feel like has an acquired taste and slowly grows on you. And is not super well understood by everyone. So I thought it was worth talking a little bit about some MS Build stuff in detail.
The easiest thing to say is it's in your CS proj, whether you know it or not.
You've been using MS Build, whether you want to admit it or not, right? Just depends on, what the varying levels of things you've done with MS Build are. So, it might be worth, I don't know if it's worth talking about the old days, the dark times, but do you ever remember, of course you remember, you used like the whole full project format, CS project with all the project type GUIDs and all the different things. And like historically CS projects and project files were kind of a scary thing to look at. Like what was your progression of getting more comfortable with those things?
Well, I think the biggest thing is why you didn't touch them out of the box was because CS Proj was considered off limits for a lot of projects, right? Because it was managed by the IDE, or it was assumed in a lot of cases. Now you could go in there, edit stuff, but the file would be so darn big that every time you wanted to make a change to the CS Proj file, you were guaranteed that you were going to get a merge conflict when you shipped it over the
yeah, merge conflict. And honestly, like a lot of the stuff in there was not super well understood. At least that's where I started. I kind of, early days was always afraid to touch too much in there. But one of the things that I think has helped that or made it less scary has been the introduction of we called them SDK style projects, right? So there's like the old format that had all these things, and then there was a newer format that finally the .NET team was like, hey, this is a thing that, people need to use, and we want to make it a little bit more approachable and have less junk in there and less opportunity for those kind of merge conflicts and stuff like
the
that.
Slim CS Proj.
The slim, yeah, see, they should have had it named by us. Focused CS project. Yeah. So that, like, do you know what a new project file looks like today? Not like a MAUI one necessarily. Like, yes, we can talk about that. But if you just do like a new console app.
It's like five lines, I think. It's basically specifying the language version of C#, which is usually the latest.
Is that in the template?
Implicit usings. I believe
nullability,
because those are all things you kind of some love, some hate. So you get to pick your poison, and then obviously the target framework, right? Is it just plain Net 8? Is it, what the hell? Where are you targeting with this thing? Oh, and I guess obviously the program type. Is it a library or an executable?
I think
for the console app, it has to specify that.
Yeah, I think the default, and that was another thing that kind of was brought in with these projects, right? There's, you can change those properties and stuff, but there's usually kind of a sensible default. So I think by default, output type is, library, and you don't have to necessarily specify that. I'm not sure if that's in the template or not, but yeah. So the point being that these things are really kind of slim to begin with, right? And that's kind of the starting point of the whole conversation. One thing that, as we were building MAUI and we realized that we needed to do some kind of sensible defaults for people, we had the conversation, like, what do you kind of try to hide from being in that default project file, and what do you put in there to give people sort of a breadcrumb, you know, to understanding what is available to them, or how it works even. So, you know, kind of quiz time on this. What do you know what's in a default MAUI project? What kind of things are in that template? Yeah,
well, see, I work with the templates quite a bit, right? So yeah. I generally know, I think I'm ahead of you guys in terms of what's out of the box template.
Yeah, you've definitely added or augmented more. We have to, for many reasons, move slowly and keep it more slim. Yeah,
you gotta keep it slim. But what's in there today, I think out of the box from you guys, is obviously the NuGet packages, obviously the uses MAUI flag. Those are kind of a given. MAUI version, you don't put out of the box, which I'm kind of hoping you'll change, but we'll see.
No, see, I mean, yeah. Well, that's, and NuGets were not in the box until Net 8, yeah, okay, in the template.
Fair. So that's not there, but then you also have your base target, like target platforms. Like, is it iOS? What's your, mm-hmm, what's your lowest common denominator? If it's Android, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I think that's pretty much it.
Oh, but there's more. Wait, there's more. We also have, I'm just going to open up a project that I created just to look at it. I know some of the things. There's actually quite a few things in here. Maybe it's gotten to the point where it needs another look at slimming it down. So we've got a bunch of properties, right? We've got, like you said, they use MAUI and they use single or the single project and all that. But we've got things like application title and ID, oh, yeah, and versions.
All that stuff. I forgot all about it. That stuff. See, the assets.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. The MAUI icon, the splash screen, the images, the fonts, the assets, and then we've got kind of the supported OS platform version for each platform, right? So if it's iOS, you know, there's a different minimum supported version that you can specify in your app with that. So there's a bunch of different things. And so, you know, like I said, when we were starting to do this, one of my goals since I've become, you know, tolerable of MS Build, or almost to the point of liking it, I kind of think it's almost Stockholm syndrome-ish, because it's like you get enough knowledge into how these things work. And I don't know if I love it or hate it, but I still keep going back to it. I mean, I have to keep going back to it, but there's a weird appreciation that I feel like, you know, you come up with after enough work with it.
I find I tend to go into these a lot now because of CI, working with MS Build and stuff. If you don't like doing a lot of top heavy YAML, which I don't, because it's hard as hell to test YAML. You basically have to go through a day of test failures or test build failures to get it.
Yeah, like,
but here,
the old like 100 commits to get the thing working.
I could just run the .NET command line, see if it's building with whatever stupid things I've done or not done. It's, and at the end of the day, that's going to produce a version, probably a deployment target, et cetera. Like it's going to do, like .NET does all the packaging stuff. And you just pass it environment variables and it figures out the rest. So I tend to do a ton of stuff here now in the CS Proj.
Well, and this is what I want more people to get comfortable with, because we get a lot of questions too with, you know, something as simple as I'll take like my app. I have a MAUI icon in it, and because of the way that I want my icon to look on each platform, I kind of don't want to use the same values for everything on all the different platforms. So on Android, like you've got the things that compose from a foreground and a background file, right? And we'll do the work to like overlay, like build the resources out for Android so that it's a supported adaptive icon for that platform. That's like one of their features. And then you can specify like what the scale of the foreground image is, and that changes how things get put together. So in theory, you can have that be the same value, and then we do like our best job of everything for every platform. But in reality, I want things to look a little bit different between platforms. And so like we'll see this from people over and over again, whether it's your icon or maybe it's an image, like you've got, you know, an SVG that you're letting MAUI resize to use on a tab bar. Well, on Android, you know, maybe the tab bar size is different than iOS, maybe with the native controls or with whatever you're doing. And so people are starting to be like, well, how do I, so do I have to copy this image twice? And I have to, it's like, well, no, like start learning a little bit of how to use these project files and how to use MS Build and learn how to use some basic conditions, right? And so you can do a lot in your own project if you know just a little bit about how to do some of these things. And this is the thing that I keep meaning to build a talk on, and maybe doing this episode will help me do that at some point. Because like a lot of this is hard to explain over a podcast for sure too. But it's kind of that notion of like, hey, like maybe let's give everybody the idea that there's stuff to learn in this space. And it's not that hard. I mean, there's concepts that are, but if you learn just a little bit, you can do a whole lot more with your app than you maybe realized or you know, did things other ways. That was a much harder way to do it.
Here's an immediate upsell. If you work with CS Proj, and you, let's actually, no, you know what, the everybody likes to use the NuGet package manager, right? Go in, right click, add a NuGet package. I don't know about you, but when you start to put in Android packages, it takes forever to resolve versions. It goes out and tries to download the internet. Just copy and paste what you need, stick it in the CS Proj, save the file, boom, it's there. You don't have to wait.
Well, and I just do it. I find too, when I'm updating NuGet, sometimes I have enough conflicts that like when I'm trying to update a version of one thing, it's like, oh no, like all these projects need this other version and this other dependency pulls in a different one. And then you can end up in a mode that, you know, isn't super easy to know necessarily how to get out of when you're upgrading.
And the NuGet package manager, so I kinda can't figure it out.
It's like, yeah, exactly.
Go into your CS Proj anyway. So just go into CS Proj and do it.
Yeah. So, and then that's what I, yeah, exactly. So then you kind of go look up what versions I need, just put it all in there, make it what you want, and you're done. And it's easy.
You know, it's funny because there's not really a thing in like, if you go to the JavaScript world, there is no package, there is a package manager, but there's no real package manager UI. You just do npm install this, npx install this.
It's all command line.
It's the same thing. Some people even edit the package files directly as well.
Yeah. And .NET has like the command line, and .NET has those commands too. I'm not sure if you're aware of those, but you can do like .NET NuGet add, you know, whatever.
I did know you could version. Do them. I don't think I've ever done them personally. I don't think I've ever even remotely.
I never remember the syntax, right? Like I know to go in the CS Proj, and that's easier than trying to remember what the command is.
Right. It's in MS Build, a lot of the stuff IntelliSense is, right? So, or sorry, in your CS Proj, a lot of it IntelliSense is. So you don't need
exactly
a command line where it doesn't necessarily IntelliSense any of the additional arguments, or maybe that's something they need to do. They need to do AI for command line. Anybody listening?
Yeah, that would be great. I'm sure there is. I'm sure it's coming up.
Yeah, okay.
So with MS Build, with C# projects, with those files, you know, like just to give a little bit of the lesson part of it, I guess, is like, you know, the main concepts here, if you're new to this, you basically have properties and you have items, right? You have property groups and item groups, right? And so properties are just a, you know, you set a property and that's the value of it. And you can change it or update it or unset it by clearing it out. Yeah, exactly. It's a variable.
Item groups
and
collections.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a list, kind of, almost, right?
Kind of.
Yeah.
You can have a collection of things with attributes on it. Specific attributes.
Exactly. It's like objects. It's like items have properties, right? They're just objects. And you can do some interesting things with item groups. And like this is, you know, we won't get into the weeds too much, but like you can compose lists of them. You can remove things from lists. You can use globbing patterns on files and stuff now. You can do batching operations so that you might have like a list of files you've globbed in and you want to run a target against every one of those files in that list. And that's
with conditions.
That's how MS Build works. You can do it
on every one of them.
Yeah. Right? With the condition. Yep. And so that's the other kind of big part of the project files. And I think where most people gain the most value from understanding it is having the conditions, right? So you can say, and going back to my example of the icon. So if I want to use a different icon on Android, all I have to do is put a condition on either the MAUI icon item itself, like that XML element, or on the item group element that it's contained inside. I can do either of those, right? Obviously, where you put that condition is going to apply in a different scope. So if you put that condition on the item group node, it's going to apply to everything in that particular XML node.
It's a very order of operations. right? That's the other thing about MS Build. As you look at these files, it's very much, it looks at it very sequentially, line by line.
Yeah, you kind of read through it. Now, there are some weird gotchas in that, in saying that, like item groups and property groups are evaluated somewhat differently. Mm-hmm. And so if you open up a MAUI project, if you've ever seen, you know, where we use like the, in the condition, we'll use like the MS Build function and then get target platform identifier. And then we pass it the target framework property. It's really long. Like I hate it. And it's something that I'd really like to see improved. And we've had conversations around it. It's hard to get MS Build team to want to buy into adding like a special kind of attribute to describe this. But one of the operations that we've, as MAUI, made more common is to say, I want to pivot and condition based on the target platform. So iOS or Mac Catalyst or Android. So you've seen that big ugly function.
I've been told that you don't need to do that full thing anymore. Are you saying that messaging is false? Because I'll be honest, doing just the target framework contains works in 99.9% of the cases that I abuse with it.
Yeah, so that does work. You can do the target platform contains. That's an option. The nice thing about using the framework. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So originally when I didn't know as much about MS Build, and I still don't fully understand this particular case, but I know that it can break. We would just use, there would be a target platform identifier property. All right. So you kind of think like, well, why don't you just condition on target platform identifier equals iOS? Great.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the weirdness comes in with like the order of how things are evaluated. And for a property group, sometimes that, in this case, it wasn't, you know, the target platform identifier wasn't filled out by the time the property groups were evaluated. Is essentially what happened. And so that it wouldn't actually do what you think it would do.
Or you'd stick a version on it, right? So it'd be net80-iOS17.something later on. That's what it comes out to.
Yeah, that could happen for the target framework. But there was like specifically a target platform identifier property that should just contain iOS in theory. But again, it's back to like sometimes the order of operations is a bit weird. So there are some kind of nuances like that. But generally speaking, like you said, it's pretty easy, like straight down. One cool thing you can do is import, you know, various files to another file. You can do that explicitly, but one of the things that I know a lot of people have gotten more familiar with is the directory build props files, right?
Yep. I use them for pretty much everything. If you're doing any large, any MAUI projects beyond one single project, which I, you know, once you start to get into the enterprise groups, they'll often have like a lot of projects that are being referenced into the main MAUI app. And now they're still using single projects. So they'll still have like an iOS and Android identifier. The problem is that the IDE still isn't good at saying, look, just compile the Android side of things or just compile the iOS side of things. So you're able to do stuff in like the target frameworks, right in the directory build props and say, yeah, I don't care about Android today. I'm working in iOS, go away. Right. And it speeds up your build exponentially. So I do that.
Yeah, we did that in our repo too. Yeah. And it's kind of a convenient way. So those things kind of get automatically included, you know, depending where you put them in the right directory. Right. So I think it looks like in the current path and keeps traversing up to find them. Is that, I think that's true. Right? Yep.
I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong. I only usually ever have one. Like I won't have like a root directory platform or root directory props. I have them in the folders and I don't tend to nest.
I don't know actually if it will keep traversing up if it finds one. Like if
it stops at
it. Yeah, it might just stop. So that's a really handy thing or way to do it too. One of the other things that I think is interesting is you know, in your project element at the top of a project file, there's that SDK, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like usually it's Microsoft.net.sdk. That actually refers to an SDK, but that SDK actually could come from a NuGet package. And I don't know if you remember back in the Xamarin days. Again, I'm sure you do. What was Claire Novotny's
MS Build
SDK
extras?
Extras.
I used it like everywhere.
It basically allowed you to do to use an SDK style project to build Xamarin stuff for one, right? And then to multi-target with Xamarin stuff.
You always could multi-target. What it did for you nice was allowed you to be lazy. So you didn't need to necessarily know the version that was, like, it figured it all out for you. So at the end of the day, we were just putting Xamarin.iOS 10 and Mono Android 9.0, right? Like, that's all we were doing. But it was actually under the hood. You had to put a lot more detail, and you had to include, again, if we went back to the old big CSproj files, if it was an Android project, there'd be like 5 million extra properties that you'd have to set. MS Build Extra said, yeah, we'll just do all that junk for you. You don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's like, we know what most people want. And if you want to override it, you still can. Like, that's the other thing about MS Build stuff is there might be all of these defaults set. And we do this to an extent in MAUI itself too. But you can always override them, right? If it's a property, you can just change the property, make the value something else that you want it to be.
Yeah, because you're at the end of the scale. Your CSproj is pretty much the last in line, unless you tell it it's not the last in line. If you start importing stuff later on, you're the end of the line. So you can change all those variables according to what you need.
And that's the kind of magic sauce for like the workload stuff for MAUI too, and the SDK import, right? So that, like I said, that Microsoft Net SDK, that's actually pulling in, it's saying, okay, like, I'm looking for this SDK that is this name, and then that SDK, I forget all the specifics, but there's like an SDK.props and an auto SDK, you know, or auto imports or something. And so it's basically looking for these files by convention and saying, okay, I'm going to import this into the MS Build evaluation before, you know, there'll be props that go before, which is gives you an opportunity to, like, the convention is supposed to be you set kind of default values and stuff there, right? You're not doing so much like targets and logic of things, but you're setting default values there up top so that you declare those, and then after that imports, your project stuff is evaluated, which gives it the opportunity to override those values. And that's kind of how things fit together.
Now let me ask, here's a good question before you, because you did say workloads, so the pitchforks are about to come out. But let's go back. There is one thing that you guys did. This drives me personally insane. So maybe this is a good chance to explain it. So I am doing a lot more of the MAUI Blazor hybrid stuff, right? That was one of those weird ones where you guys decided to flip the SDK as opposed to have a flag, like a use MAUI Blazor
like the Razor SDK, right? That gets
so
set?
Why not have like a MAUI SDK, and that's a MAUI SDK, and then you can say yes, use Blazor or don't use Blazor or whatever. Why the different SDK only for the native? Is it actually not? It's more because of Razor and not because of.
Yeah, it is a good question, and actually, to be honest, I at this point I don't know if I could recall the nuances to some of it, and maybe we're even at a point where we could look at making that less weird. But I seem to recall early on there was maybe some tooling stuff or, you know, something related to, like, no, we needed to pull in the Razor SDK for Blazor apps to be able to use Razor, like that pulls in a bunch of stuff. But one of the interesting things about how MS Build is set up this way, and, like, yes, there's project and there's an SDK attribute, but you can actually specify multiple SDKs that you want to import. There's a syntax for that, and basically you move that one SDK attribute out into its own element within the project element. Yeah, and you can say, like, SDK import, right? So you can compose multiple SDKs that way. So, you know, in theory, yeah, maybe we could have done something a bit different there. I think we needed to import their SDK, but maybe we could have done it, you know, in our own props file and kind of hidden that from people. But I think there was a problem with doing that for some reason or another. All right. So
one of my questions.
Yeah, but with the workload stuff, so, like, the workloads are almost like an SDK in the sense that, so what happens is there's basically our workload, if you're a workload, you have like an entry point, just like the SDK.props or targets or whatever. And in that, you're always in, that file's always imported. Like every workload that is installed will have this file. It gets imported into every MS Build evaluation. And that's kind of the entry point where you have to do the lightest thing you can do. Because like one other thing is nobody wants their build slow down because your SDK is doing all sorts of crazy stuff when it shouldn't be, right? Yep. So it's like, so what we did is our entry point for MAUI for the workload is pretty much just a condition on use MAUI true. It's a little more nuanced than that, but like that's kind of the story. And as soon as, and I think even that is only checked if the target framework is, you know, new enough or whatever, like we do another check there. So like we bail very early as a workload if you're not going to do something MAUI related so that we don't impact the evaluation performance. But once we know that we're in, then we're like, okay, pull in our big file of everything, right? And we start messing around with all sorts of different properties and item groups and defaults and stuff. So that's kind of how those things fit together. But I, you know, interestingly, like I think in theory, we could have been just another SDK that gets imported too. But there's kind of implications around compatibility with other workloads and runtime versions that are shipping with the SDK and not with the SDK and stuff like that. So similar mechanism.
And workloads. So workloads, because you guys are pretty much every SDK right now is pretty much Microsoft.NET.SDK, unless you're getting wild. There's very few, I think, in all fairness, there's probably very few people changing that nowadays. I think that's probably going to change again. I know there's some companies doing some stuff around it because they're getting crazier and hairier with their stuff. But so your SDK or the Microsoft.NET SDK basically pulls in the world, but tries to get rid of the world real quick.
Yeah.
So whatever workloads I have installed, which that I love to say pitchforks because there's a lot of people that hate on the workloads. I get it. We won't tackle that one today.
That's a whole other episode. I think we could.
Well, specifically John talking about it and answering the tough questions. That's one I won't get involved because I think the community in general doesn't understand them and what they do.
Yeah, there's some friction points, and I mean it's something that's kind of a you know still a work in progress. Like there are some new things that will be coming to workloads that should help make some of that you know the understanding and management a bit easier. I think what happened is, you know, the idea of workloads was good. For one, you want to give some sort of assurance or, you know, comfort in people knowing that like MAUI is a part of .NET, even if it's a workload, it's still like a very official part of .NET, right? So like there was some kind of, you know, element of how that feels from a trust perspective, I think. And the goal ultimately with workloads and why, so like MAUI could have been part of the just pure .NET SDK. The problem is that adds a lot of size to the SDK. And the goal is not to keep bloating the .NET SDK installer size, but rather to shrink it down. So, you know, longer term, I know there's some talks of looking at like, well, how could we turn, you know, ASP.NET into a workload? How could we turn WPF into a workload? That kind of stuff, right? Because that, if you want to download .NET and you can say, here's the core SDK itself, and it's like 30 megs, that'd be nice. And then maybe I want to use ASP.NET. Maybe I don't. Maybe I want WPF. Maybe I don't. But those things are in the box today. And so extracting them out is kind of a common or a logical next step, right? And so workloads, when MAUI, we had the opportunity to come in, there's like, well, let's not bloat things right from the bat, off the bat. And so like this concept of workloads was created. But I think the reality is somewhere that, you know, like MAUI in terms of quality and the we're sitting at the top of this big pyramid of different things that we have very little influence over, right? Like from Xcode to Android to whatever. And then it bubbles up the chain, like from, you know, the runtime, which we have more control over because that's part of Microsoft. But we're at the very top, and it's really hard to get the layer that we have of all these abstractions perfect. And it's just it's a much more volatile piece of the whole puzzle, right? So we want to iterate more rapidly than I think originally the idea for workloads was created, which was essentially like major .NET release, good for a year. Like, well, no, that doesn't really cut it for mobile.
So did John sell people on the workloads? Leave us a comment. I'd love to know. there's our cell.
So,
because I know most people will come out of the woodworks with their pitchforks and their fire torches and stuff with workloads.
Yeah,
I think I get them. I know why they're there, because you guys need to be involved later in the process before, you know, all this other craziness gets involved. So it's almost before NuGet can really get going or any of the transitive build stuff.
Yeah. So that is the main reason.
Right.
Yeah. We do need to be injected into the build earlier than NuGet allows us. And you know, so I think it's fair to say, though, that, you know, workloads was a big thing to bite off, and we maybe didn't do the best job of it all up, obviously. I mean, that's fine. We've struggled internally with workloads. Like, this, I don't want to try and pretend like this whole thing was excellent and perfect and everyone loves them. There's still a lot of pain. And one of the things we did to kind of ease that pain in the interim while things get better is to do more of our stuff in NuGet. So there's still like the Maui workload itself, but the workload contains actually very little now. And it actually brings in implicit NuGet references to the NuGets.
To do
so, the idea is like, yeah, you can just install the Maui workload. You might have like the same one from GA, although I think you need to go newer now for iOS. It's a whole other subject. But then you can install a newer NuGet package, and that's given people an easier way to like kick the tires on nightly builds and service releases that are kind of coming up before we push them into the workload and that sort of thing.
But I think that's the key point to bring up. If we're talking about MS build and we're talking about workloads, the key thing mm-hmm. that you said there is basically the workloads, again, they need to be in the box in a kind of manner of speaking, or at least official, but they need mm-hmm. to be involved before anything else, right? Before NuGet can get involved. So you guys need to be at the bottom layer. So regardless of implementation of, you know, workloads being good or bad for the community, there's obviously some challenges, but the main premise of why they exist is so that you could do all that MS build stuff before anything else, right? Because you're at the core of the product, right? You need the core SDK stuff to spin up before the peon starts really screwing up your stuff.
Yeah. And that's not to say, so like, you know, keeping on the subject of MS build and stuff, one of the things that I find very cool about how MS build works is the fact that you can import some MS buildy things from NuGets, right? So that we need that injection point, but at the same time, if you have a NuGet package, you can ship prop files and target files. And if you do it in a certain convention, right, like this is what kind of an aha moment for everyone when they see this and use it, which is basically I stick a file in my NuGet package in the right folder. And if it's named, you know, the right name, which is like the package identifier dot props or dot targets
in a build folder.
MS build automatically then imports that, you know, into the project that's referencing that NuGet, which is really cool. So I know like Shiny does a ton of this, right?
I don't do anything with targets right now.
No.
I took it out. I was doing some auto imports and stuff, and people were like, no. Okay. So I took that out. And I've switched to a lot of source generator stuff. So I don't need to do as much. But it's coming back. I think recently, you know, you and I have been talking about entitlements and all the permission stuff mm-hmm. and all that whack of stuff that's coming out. And MS Build has some stuff there, not necessarily for code generation, because, you know, if you're going to do code generation, you want it to be part of the compiler. That's how you got me out of my madness, because I was like, I'm going back to MS Build everything.
No.
And you're like, no. If you need it to be involved in code genning so that the IDE can see it, you have to do it in MS Build. Or you have to do it in source. Yep. Okay, fine. But something that I am doing is before all the build stuff is when I've got complicated custom entitlements, I can generate them based on a whole whack of, like, because MS Build sees the world, right? Source generators, you have to ask forgiveness, right?
Yeah. You can see some MS Build things passed into them if you ask and do the right things.
You have to say, please give me these files. And then you have to check them because sometimes they're not available. MS Build doesn't care. It can see everything from the ground up. It can navigate directories. It's great. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking at that for building custom entitlements, because there's a whole bunch of whack job going on there. I mean, the iOS team has made some improvements there, but I think this was like even more hardcore. So I go through, I iterate the packages, MS Build generates it before the build, it generates an entitlements file, build includes it. It's great. right? So, yeah. And I'm doing that with a target.
Yeah. And this is like, you know, a good example of, you know, that's a little bit more lenient advanced, but you know, one thing we have seen a bunch too is customers who are trying to make, like, either you're trying to make a NuGet package that you're sending out to the world for someone else to use. I've seen some customers trying to do like their own NuGet packages for their own internal use, which I generally shy away from unless, you know, the customer is obviously knowledgeable in the area or willing to be knowledgeable in the area, right? Because what often happens is like, well, I have this MAUI library project. We have MAUI images in it. We pack up a NuGet and then we reference the NuGet and the images aren't there, right? So it's like, okay, well, I'd love for that in some ways to automatically happen for you. But at the same time, I don't want it to automatically happen because that's when people like start including all sorts of junk that they didn't think they or didn't know they didn't want to include. But for example, like this is a good opportunity if you want to do something like this, you can add a targets file to your NuGet package that has, you know, MAUI image item group items. And you pack the image file itself in the NuGet package and you pack this targets file in it. And then a project imports this NuGet or references this NuGet. And those item group items will then get added to the build. And that's how you would actually get those images to flow through from the NuGet package into your app.
That's interesting because that's something I've never done. But when you think about it, if somebody wanted to include some asset, like a theme library, for example, or icons, I guess. Icons is a good one, right?
Yep.
They actually have to copy over because they're... I actually haven't done that.
That's and same idea for maybe not entitlements. Maybe not entitlements how you're using them, but you know, one thought that comes to mind, like if I have a plugin that I'm building that does something specific that is always going to need a certain entitlement. We can do it in MS Build now, right? I could include a props file that or a targets file, I forget where you might need to do that one, that would add the right like entitlement item group item that my library is always going to need.
Right.
And then that will just flow through the app that the user is building and referencing your NuGet package in and do the right thing for them, right? So there's like some really cool things you can do in libraries as that kind of like level of author to make people's apps just automatically work with them. Like I always love being able to do that in a library. And
funny enough, what you were talking about with the entitlements. So there is now an item group item called custom entitlement that you can actually add mm-hmm. as if it was going to go into the iOS entitlements, because that's something a lot of things need to change for builds, right? So if you're going to certain environments, your push entitlements, your app groups, all that stuff, that tends to change based on release processes. So now that it's in MS Build or the CS Proj, I guess is the better place to say it.
Yeah.
You can change all that dynamically without having to do, you know, without having to have like 600 entitlement files. You can just do it right in your CS Proj dynamically. Add conditions. I do it in the Shiny template. I basically say, if you're using a push library, if it's debug, you're going to development, APNS. If you're release, you're going to the production one. It's great. It's great. You can do it all there without multiple entitlements.
Yeah. And then you don't have to have separate
files. The case I was talking about with MS Build though, the one that I'm working on, is far more complicated. It's going through a whole lack of libraries and stuff. So.
Yeah. And I think, so you mentioned earlier too, that you do a bunch of stuff like build related in your project files or in, maybe not project files, but in MS Build, in a directory build props or something. Like that's another area that I think is a really neat place to explore for people. Like if you're got to download some, you know, zip file from some server that you need to use assets from that you don't want to have to like manually do before the build, right? Like in theory, most people could make their project always buildable from .NET Build, even if you had like some weird pre-steps that you have to do, right? There's tasks in MS Build for things like this. There's stuff for downloading files. There's stuff for, you know, zipping or unzipping files, for modifying XML files, all that kind of thing. Like what kind of stuff do you end up doing in that space?
I don't go crazy like that. I don't want to be downloading or zipping files, that's for sure. I'm glad you can, and it makes sense that you can. Thankfully, I don't. What I'm doing from a global kind of targets perspective, I know there's central package management now for NuGet. I don't really work with that yet because I've been using targets forever and it just works. But I'll do stuff like install my global packages. So when I'm authoring components, so like the Shiny library, there's two libraries I need in everything. I need Git versioning, NerdBank Git versioning, and I need SourceLink. It goes into every single library that gets built. So I install them at a global level. I like to control, I know John and the Maui team didn't like it, but I like to control kind of how I'm globbing the directories for cross-platform. So I do all that stuff there. So it applies through all of the libraries. That's just the way I like to work. I deal with all the NuGet packaging, like the icon, the README, and how that gets packaged. And then the other, I guess, kind of the wild thing I do there is how I set up the targeting for target frameworks that I'm going to use, like iOS. Because for a while there, I was building Net6, Net7, Net8, and I was building the classic Xamarin iOS 1.0, Mono Android 12.
Ooh, yeah, so, all the things.
Which was complicated. We won't even get into how I had to get around that. Suffice it to say, it was tough. Anyhow, yeah. I did a lot of that at a global level in a directory build, props and targets to do all that work because I didn't want to do it in, you know, the 13 or 14 libraries that I had at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that's a common pattern, I think. And I use that too often where even if it's like copying and pasting, like, you know, the directory build props between different repos or projects that I have so that at least it's like one place that I know in all my different totally unrelated projects to go to like set, you know, my NuGet package copyright name and all the different stuff, right? It's just kind of a nice way to be able to do it.
I think I do. Oh, yes, I do that as well. And that's that's the thing. It's all in there. It's all at a global level.
So you're not doing a lot in terms of like, you know, doing weird like zipping and downloading and stuff like that. Have you gotten into doing custom tasks at
all? Yeah, I do a bunch. Not so much with Shiny, more in terms of like professional projects, right? So like I said, that entitlements one that I'm doing. That was a that was a custom scenario where custom entitlements wasn't quite fit in the bill. It wasn't rich enough. And custom entitlements, that item group type is relatively new. So this guy doesn't have any of the restrictions. So I just said, look, I'm building a custom MS build task. It will iterate the project how it knows to do it. It'll figure out all the entitlements that need to happen. Each one of those projects, again, it's a weird professional project. I don't need to go too much into detail, but that thing has the view of the world. It gets the world and it generates the entitlement that needs to happen.
So is that a custom task that you're truly like writing in C# and building into a library? Yep. So like that I think is one of the really powerful things. Like I kind of look at it as different layers, right? Like, first of all, it's like, is there something that's like just baked into MS Build that helps me do what I want to do? If not, maybe I can make a custom target. So a target is kind of a just declaration in the XML in the MS Build of a thing that runs and it could have dependencies and can have ordering kind of relating to other targets. And in those targets, you can have, you know, you run different tasks and stuff, right? And so like the task is the thing you're customizing. You might build a target, but that's not a C# thing really. It's just an XML, like, hey, here's my target name. I want this to run before core compile because, you know, I want to have something available, you know, after that. And then it's going to invoke my tasks. And so often it's starting with a target and then maybe that target you're able to like use existing MS Build tasks. I know there's also like NuGet packages out there that add more commonly desirable type tasks that aren't available out of the box. And you might be able to cobble together like your solution for what you're trying to do with that. But then if that doesn't work, kind of the next level is like, yeah, go get into C#, you know, subclass the MS Build task API or class and, you know, implement the thing yourself, right? Which is super powerful and not that hard to do.
No, really. It's pretty much an input output, right? And even taking variables, from like input variables and output variables, they're just attributes on properties in MS Build, like an MS Build task. So it's not
but
like
those are
classic Because basically you can look at an MS Build task almost like a console app, right? It's essentially one line. It's you implement an abstract class. You have to implement the one method that they have, but you can have it all your inputs and outputs instead of trying to parse it and validate it. You can have, this is the type I'm expecting to come from MS Build. It's an input variable. This is the name. And it's all in attributes. It's actually quite beautiful. I wish all the console frameworks worked like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like for the targets, the inputs and outputs are, you know, super important too. And not, you don't have to use them. But the cool thing is once you, this is getting more into the weeds, but
getting into the weeds.
Yeah. I mean, if you specify, you know, inputs, which might be like, I have a bunch of text files that I want to do something with, something special. And so that might be your set of inputs. And then your outputs, you know, might be, oh, I have like one weird binary format that I transform these text files into that it needs to be included in my app for something special. Or it might be multiple files or whatever. But if you specify both of those things, MS Build will be smart enough to kind of detect, like, did any of the inputs change since the output file that exists, you know, was created? And so it'll know to skip targets and stuff and during builds when it doesn't need to run, because it knows, because you told it what it's getting and what it should be outputting, and it's going to kind of reconcile that for you to see if it needs to run or not.
It is resizitizer is an MS Build task, is it not?
It's several tasks, okay, and targets, and you know, the NuGet package of the props and targets files, including all those things. Yeah, there's quite a few things in there.
It's important to understand, because you can do a lot of things with source generators. Like you can read text files. It's just source generators build into the compiler. So as things are generating from those files, your compiler sees it right away. MS Build.
Yeah.
Like I said, John saved me from going just insane with them. But it's really happens before or outside of the main C# compile.
Yeah, I think the rule of thumb is basically if you need to emit source code that needs to end up, you know, in the resulting app, you need to use source generators. And one of the big reasons for that, like we used to even with Xamarin Forms and stuff, and Roslyn, actually we still,
Roslyn's a problem.
Roslyn is the problem, but we used to emit like IL, and we still actually do emit IL for XAML compilation, because the XAML compilation we don't use during debug mode, and that's the key point here in what I'm going to say. But if you need to emit code that you're going to you know, have in the app that you're debugging, if you don't use source code generators, Roslyn doesn't understand anything about the code that you are emitting. And in our case for a MAUI app, that was basically making hot reload, like C# hot reload, just not work, because we need to emit code for like when you have a XAML control and you give it a name, right? The X name attribute, we emit some code for the kind of the code behind stuff that creates like the field on the class and everything for you to be able to reference that from code. And so originally we didn't do it that way. And that just is a non-starter with hot reload stuff. So if you need to emit code, you got to use source gen. And then for most other things, you know, if you can avoid source gen, that's probably best for your own sanity and for performance and all that kind of stuff.
Source generation.
But yeah, then MS Build is your
source
friend.
Source generation can be tough. That's for sure. It's tough to debug. It's tough to work with.
Yeah.
MS Build.
It's not easy.
I know it sounds scary. Sometimes the registration of it can be a bit of a pain in the arse, depending on how you're registering it and pulling it into a NuGet package. But once you've got the pattern down, it's pretty stupid simple. And it's basically, you don't have to obey any permissions. You can iterate directories. I mean, if you wanted to do a virus, not that I'm suggesting do a virus. If you're going to do a virus, I can see this is the place to do it. Don't go writing a virus.
Yeah, it's
leave NuGet alone.
Yeah, it's a super powerful area for sure. Like for resizitizer, we're not emitting any code anywhere. We're just changing like some images, and we're emitting like resources and stuff that Android will compile in eventually, but nothing that, you know, .NET, that C# or the you know, Roslyn needs to care about. So that's an obvious choice to use that. It's not too bad to make those things like testable and debug them either. You can you know, there's packages that you can kind of wire into a test project that let you basically new up your task and invoke it and test it out that way, right? So it's not too bad. It's definitely powerful. And if you're really you know, the best developer out there and write zero bugs, you can actually just paste your C# for a task inline into your MS build, you know, C# project. Yeah. It's really ugly, but it's kind of handy in a pinch. Like if you have just a really little bit of C# that you're like, I know this works. You can just drop it.
So whenever I have MS build tasks, I usually go to Dan Siegel or I go to John and I call both of them Mr. MS build. The only problem is John keeps telling me to do it as inline. I'm like, no, icky. It's like C# code.
Yeah, it is gross. But
in
like
XML, it doesn't IntelliSense. It looks like hell.
No, yeah.
And to debug, it's even harder. Just put it in a task and debug it. It's just easy.
Yeah, that is the right way. I only say to do that because I'm super lazy and I'm like, oh, I don't want to set up a whole project for this and then have to include the DLL and I'll just do it in the task.
But he kept asking me, did you do it in inline? No, I didn't do it in an inline, John. I put it in a task. It's what's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And also when you ask me questions, often don't know the answer because I'm not actually Mr. MS Build. I always go to another favorite Jonathan, which is Jonathan Peppers, who seems to know, you know, most of the MS Build answers that I need.
Oh, well, see, then
I have a resource there that I get.
You do more MS Build stuff than I do, let's be fair.
I have maybe, probably. In the past.
Probably. Yeah. But anyhow, it is a powerful system. I'm using it for a lot of stuff now. I do some of the guinea pig stuff for John apparently now. I know it now. He's just admitted to me. He's not really Mr. MS Build. Yeah. But again, you can do a lot of stuff outside of it. It's just easier. Source generators are painful. I've gone that route. I will go that route because it really is the only route to go, but I wish they were easier to make. Because some of that stuff is really tough. And then to make it perform with your builds is really tough.
Yes. So that's the hardest part, I think. And I think that's been fixed a bit with, you know, require like doing the incremental source gen stuff. But
which made source generators that much harder, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. And I know that those teams would like, you know, if you had to ask them, they would say, like, don't build a source generator unless you really know that you need to build a source generator. And if you don't know for sure, or you think you're not sure, you probably don't want to do it, right? Because the other part of it is, you know, I've seen this in other packages too, where there's a source generator that if you try and do things kind of too broadly, for instance, and kind of inspect too many different possibilities, it's not going to perform well. And then that team eventually is going to come knocking on your door and ask you, can you please fix your source generator so it's not slowing everybody's, you know, Roslyn sessions now.
Yeah,
so that's something that they have to struggle with too.
I had that with the source generator in version 2 of Shiny, and the VS for Mac team was like, hey, this guy's coming up. And I was like, well, yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's one of those like, please don't abuse it. Like, don't do something you shouldn't, even if you think you maybe want to.
Well, and then I started putting attributes on things, and then people were like, well, do I have to put an attribute on it? Like, because I'm not scanning the world for you. This is it. Pick your poison, man. This is how it's going to go.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's a lot of MS Build stuff. One of the things, you know, for this week's plugin package or product, I know that you had brought up Michaela's MS Build editor extension for VS, which is a really cool thing. Even if you don't want to write a lot of, you know, complicated MS Build stuff, have you used this one
yet? Yes, this has been in a beta for a while. And I think actually today, so now they know the date of this episode when we recorded it, but I think today they released like it's an official preview now, right? So it's like a thing that you should use if you're doing MS Build. So I've been using it in Visual Studio for, I don't know, I think it's been out for like a year though, and just iterating on constantly.
Yeah, it's been out a while.
But it works well. It IntelliSense stuff like NuGet packages, other properties that you've created. So if you put a property in as a group, it'll tell you what the current evaluation should be. It's pretty cool. It's actually quite helpful.
And one, yeah, I think just even the NuGet package, you know, versions and search kind of thing in itself is just handy, right?
Yeah, it goes into IntelliSense that you type in like something like shiny dot and it goes, here's all the packages that manage it. I'm like, oh wow. And it's so yeah. that's pretty cool because, like I said, I forget versions. Try doing that with support packages.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Well, but that's awesome. No, this thing does it for me. So now I still, and that was one of my big gripes. If you don't like editing CSproj, but you hate NuGet performance, edit CSproj. It's just faster. You just go in there and type exactly what you want, press save, and it's there. No fighting.
Yeah, no, I almost exclusively now edit my projects directly. Like I know, and really even in VS now, like the double click is opening the project file, right? It's not like in VS Mac, unless I had to do a setting for that.
I think you did a setting for that. I don't think that's true.
Well, I like it that way. I want it that way everywhere because I just double click the project now and it's just like, oh, boom, here's your CS project.
Are you sure
and
then I can just edit it. VS Code, John?
Yeah, no, I'm doing it right now as we speak. Okay. I have to get the property page. I have to actually go right click and go to properties. Otherwise, it just
making sure because you tend you know VS Code is the latest and greatest, and you're approaching 40, so memory starts to go a little bit after that.
It's true, yeah, it's true. But no, this is the way. So yeah, that's I think that's a pretty good first shot at MS Build. Anything we missed? I don't think so. I mean, we missed lots. There's tons more you can do, but that's kind of the first thing.
Well, it's also hard to do a podcast on it because there's so many things involved. Like, hey, type $ brace brackets here, right? Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, we can't really show you examples. But what I hope to achieve from this is that if you've listened to this, that you put on your, you know, brave big kid shoes. I don't know if that's a thing.
Here come the pitchforks again.
Yeah, no, I'm not suggesting that you like go figure out workloads, but I'm suggesting that you just, you know, give looking at your CS project and really starting to think about how you might use it and use like conditions and use different things here and there. Give it a try. Learn a little bit about it, get comfortable with it. And, you know, it's going to serve you well if you learn a little bit about it.
I agree. That's all I got. I use it everywhere. I've been editing CSproj for a while.
Great. Well, I think that'll do it this week. So, you know, get out there, try your CS project. Let us know on gontonmobile.io if you have more questions about CS projects or if you want to tell us that, you know, your world is now changed because you've discovered this and it'll never be the same and your apps are awesome now. And if that's also the case, obviously, You owe us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or some other podcasting platform. So get out there and do that
as
well.
Leave some feedback for John's dad jokes.
That's right. No. Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? All right. Thanks, all. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, everybody.